Another weekend in Fargo, another shooting. What do we know about this one plus the others from the weekend before? President Trump says he's putting D.C. police under federal control. What do we know about the D.C. police's opinion of this? You might be surprised. And the biggest drug seizure ever in South Dakota history. What do we know about what was being transported and who is behind it? This is why you tune into the Steve Olsen Show, because we tell you what you need to know about all of these things. It's not the Need to Know Morning Show specifically, but it's maybe the Need to Know Morning Show Part 2. Kevin and Alex get you going here in the morning, and then we lock it down in the late afternoon on weekdays by bringing you a recap of the news cycle, which gets bigger, crazier, more involved, more populated. Seems like every day there are so many interesting things to talk about. We will get to as many of them as we can here in the next 2 hours. It is August 11th, 2025, and the Minnesota State High School Girls Softball Tournament was still won by a guy. And that's probably a good spot for us to start with here today. Thank you to the, I don't want to say many of you, but the handful of you that sent notes along after the interview that we did with Minnesota State Representative Lee Finke on Friday. I tried very hard to be respectful during that conversation, but it's kind of hard when one of the big things driving the political resume of Representative Finke is this whole business of trans rights, specifically to children. And when you start from a place of polar oppositeness, it's hard to find common ground. And I think we were reminded of that on Friday. I thought it was a cordial conversation. I respect Representative Finke for reaching out to us to say, hey, let's have a conversation and let's see if there are things that we can agree on. I'm not sure that we found a whole lot there, but I did appreciate Representative Finke's time on that and to give a call clearly to an audience and a program that would not be friendly to some of those ideas. I will say this again. I don't want anything that I say in this show ever to be personal to anybody, and that was certainly true on Friday. So when I said the ideas that I hear, they're dark, they're destructive, they're evil, it'll be played off, I'm sure, and I imagine the Finke camp will use this for getting the word about their agenda and talking about, hey, we need to make sure we stand up strong because there's people like this guy in Fargo who want to see things happen that are very different from what we see happen. So it'll be played off differently, but it really, to me, isn't personal. And I'll say this, if you tell me, well, why do you use such strong language? I say, look, all sin is evil, according to the good book and according to the good Lord. And it's not that there are good people. There are not good people who somehow have an evil of concept in their worldview. We all have, it says in the good book, have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. That means we've all got a little bit of evil that has been in our past. And so I don't want this ever to be personal here, and hopefully we had a conversation that we will all look back on and say it wasn't the friendliest conversation ever, but it was cordial, and it was hopefully respectful along the way. We've got a lot of ground to cover here on the Steve Olsen Show today. Along the way here today in the 5 o'clock hour, Bridget Riedel will join us, and she's the Ag Director here at Flag Family Media. West Nile is a problem in our state right now. Multiple people hospitalized across the state, and based on the number of mosquito bites I got over the weekend, and I was trying to put stuff on when I was outside, but I got bit a few times. I've got that blood type that the mosquitoes all love. We all need to really be aware of West Nile. And Bridget has a family story to tell about West Nile. And she is an advocate for making sure people are aware of this and that we all take it seriously. So we'll have her on the program here today in the 5 o'clock hour. We'll talk quite a bit today about Washington, D.C. It is now under the watch of the federal government when it comes to law enforcement in the city. It makes me a little squishy, a little queasy about the thought of the federal government taking over city business like that. I mean, it sounds great because President Trump is in office, but what if this was a year ago and Joe Biden was the president and said we're taking over law enforcement in Fargo, North Dakota. So I do think about those things, but there is one big reason here that gives me some pause in my queasiness. So we'll talk about that here today. We're going to talk quite a bit today about the Fargo, I think even the chief called it a rash of violent crime in the city today when he had his press conference. And these press conferences are now being held darn near every day. And I'm thankful that they are, but it sure makes it seem like crime is a problem in the city. And they're trying to tell us it's not that big of a deal statistically, but every time we have one of these things, it makes it feel like it indeed is a huge problem and one that we have been asking for more information from the city. We're getting that now, but boy, it sure seems like it's something all the time. So lots to do here on the show today, and I'm going to play for you a segment of the Larry Kudlow program today. Harris Faulkner and Newt Gingrich were both on today, and they were talking about D.C. and why it's important to have law and order in Washington, D.C. So with that, let's get started with the 4 o'clock wrap. Semi-automatic storylines going rapid fire, catching you up on a busy Monday. It is Monday, August 11th, the year of our Lord, 2025. Average high for this day is 82, average low 58. Record high 96 back in 1936, record low 39 in 1902. Sunrise this morning was at 6:20, sun will set at 8:43 p.m. In the stock market today, it was a down day on Wall Street. Stocks finished lower across the board. The Dow was down 200 points, S&P 500 down 16, the NASDAQ down 64. Points today. WTI crude oil pretty much unchanged at $63.90 a barrel. Gold today down $97 an ounce, and silver down 89 cents an ounce. The president said today that gold is not going to be tariffed. And you'd think that that might make the price of gold go up, but it did not today. Thought that was interesting. In the crypto world today, Bitcoin was up about $1,000 or so, up about $2,000 from when we left you on Friday. Briefly touched $120,000, and that $120,000 number is crucial if you're one who watches the charts of Bitcoin. We kind of hit our head on that as a ceiling before, and now we're back here again. And so Bitcoin, again, may be leading our way out of the financial doldrums here. We'll see what happens. AAA says average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas today, $3.13. Minnesota average price is $2.95. North Dakota is at $2.88. South Dakota at $2.97. Diesel fuel today unchanged at $3.71 a gallon. In the news today, another weekend in Fargo, another shooting. Police say they were called to a shooting in the area of 10th Street North and 6th Avenue North. This is not downtown, but it's not all that far away from that. This happened just after midnight Saturday morning. When police got to the area, they found a man with a gunshot wound. The man and the victim were involved in a physical fight before the shooting happened. The suspect left the scene before officers got there. Police have released a description. They're looking for a scruffy-looking white male wearing a red shirt, which is probably half Fargo. They are looking for tips and information about that. They say they have some vague details from one witness, but they need more information here. Now, this all happened just hours before Red River Market was getting going for the day and the 2025 Pride Parade. So police sent a few more people downtown, and all was quiet. The victim is in critical but stable condition, and they also say Saturday's shooting is not related to any of the previous shootings that happened in Fargo last weekend, which is, as you know, there were two of them last weekend. So the beat goes on, unfortunately, when it comes to violent crime in our city. There was also an event early this morning for a stabbing incident inside an apartment unit in South Fargo. It happened on 32nd Street South in the 1300 block. The victim was found inside the apartment building, rushed to the hospital. The injuries are said to be not life-threatening. So we had a stabbing here this morning. Police announced today at a press conference that they have arrested a suspect from an assault last weekend in the 300 block of Broadway. His name is Tobias Walker, 19 years of age. Isn't that great? 19 years of age. And already we're talking about assaults that left people in a critical condition there. He's being held in the Clay County Jail in Moorhead, which is where they found him. He'll be extradited, they believe, to Fargo. The Forum today had a very good article about the rise in drug cases going on in Fargo. I guess kind of going along for the ride with everything else we're talking about here. It was a really well done and complete story. These are the kind of stories that the Forum is so good at doing. 38 people so far this year have been charged in 12 cases with direct ties to the Fargo-Moorhead Metro. And this note I found interesting. Public health officials say overdoses this year are up 82%. That's almost a doubling of that. So there's a ton of drugs we know coming through this area here, and I thought the Forum did a nice job in chronicling that. The big national story of the day, President Trump said he's taking over Washington's police department and activating 800 members of the National Guard in hopes of reducing crime. This coming at a time when city officials are stressing that crime is already falling in the nation's capital. But the president feels that more needs to be done. He said, quote, we're going to be taking our capital back, and he also is going to be getting rid of the slums. So a definite escalation in the White House getting involved in local crime, although it is the obviously the site of the federal government downtown. Kevin Cramer, U.S. Senator, says he's all for it. He says you've got to make sure you know what you're doing when you do things like this here. He said, who really believes that the federal government is good at running anything, much less a city? But that said, it's amazing how much better the federal government would be than the District of Columbia itself. He said that on the What's on Your Mind program with Scott Henin earlier today. An air quality alert has been issued for Minnesota through Tuesday because of wildfires. Yes, of course, central Saskatchewan and Manitoba. It continues until 9 a.m. tomorrow. And so that, of course, means the air in the Red River Valley isn't all that great either, and you can see it outside. In South Dakota, the governor has announced a record drug seizure by the South Dakota Highway Patrol, who apprehended a 42-year-old male who was found to be transporting about 207 pounds of crystal meth with a street value of $12 million. It's the largest meth seizure in Highway Patrol history. The driver was found to be an illegal. How about that? And is now in immigration proceedings. Isn't that something? The eighth non-citizen, they say, stopped by the Highway Patrol since they started working with ICE in these situations, so during the Trump administration, and they took 207 pounds of meth off the street. President Trump has signed an executive order that will put a 90-day extension on the China tariff deadline. It was supposed to go into effect tomorrow. The president also has struck a deal with NVIDIA and AMD, a couple of semiconductor technology companies, who have agreed to pay 15% of revenues from semiconductor sales to China to the U.S. government. So the president says, okay, we're not going to let you sell normally, but if you do, we'll let you sell some outdated. These are not the newest, latest, and greatest, but we'll let you send some outdated technology over there, but you got to pay us 15%. And they were happy to do it because it's an opportunity for them to get more money. So unusual, but there you go. And finally, Valley News Live reports that there were about 10,000 people that attended the Pride in the Park event in downtown Fargo. I thought that was a surprising number, 10,000 people. Now, that was according to volunteers, so they may have inflated the number a little bit. Who knows? But it was a four-hour event from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. But anytime you get 10,000 people together for anything, that is newsworthy, and so we pass it along here today. And those, friends, are some of the stories that are making headlines here on this Monday afternoon. When we come back on the program, we're going to have another great vacation idea for you. You're going to love this one, too. Every week I say I don't think the prices could fall any further, and they continue to do that. So we'll talk about that coming up next on the Steve Hallstrom Show. With all of the rain that we have had, there was mosquito spraying in town last week, but I don't know that it really knocked it down much. the West Nile thing is real, and a lot of people are talking about it. In fact, Marie is on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. She wants to talk about West Nile today. Hey, Marie.
Hi. So I just wanted to pass along some words that our city council in Moorhead is meeting tonight, like they normally do, I guess. One of my council members alerted me to the fact that there are a couple other members that are had an item added to the agenda that they want to want all aerial sprayings to stop in Moorhead. We are already very, very limited when we do actually spray, and we haven't had an aerial spray yet this year. There's been, I think, one ground spraying that I've seen, and I'm on all over different Facebook pages and things like that and see everybody's both sides of it, and mostly what you hear are the people that are, you know, save the pollinators and everything, and I get it. I'm a gardener. I want the pollinators, but there's a point that we're talking about public safety and public health, and when it comes to West Nile, that it's gotten absolutely ridiculous and so far one-sided. 5:30 is the meeting, the city council meeting at the MCOMP Center. For those of us who are very highly reactive to bug bites, we're of the people who, I think, by your comment earlier, it sounded like you're maybe one of those two. You get eaten alive no matter what you do.
That's right. I've got that O negative blood, and they love it. They love me. And so I put stuff on. Like, I golfed yesterday, and I put stuff on before I started, and then after nine holes, I doused my body with the stuff again because I have to do it. And sometimes they'll even just bite through that. So it's tough. It is. But it's not, like you said, Marie, it's not just a convenience or a comfort sort of issue. It's a health issue right now, no question about that. I know the Cass County Vector Control controls the spraying, but I don't know if, say, if the city of Moorhead says we don't want you coming in as often, if that will affect how much that happens. And so, yeah, that could be interesting because I've not heard of them being talked out of anything in Fargo. There was that thing about the butterflies a couple of years ago. Do you remember that when some monarch butterflies died
and
Vector Control shrugged their shoulders and said, I'm sorry, but it's either that or you get bit by mosquitoes like crazy.
Well, and that one specifically, if I remember right at the time, it was a poorly timed spray. If they would have waited two more days or something like that, they would have missed the big migration. Mm. And it's not like we decimated the entire monarch butterfly population with one spray.
Yeah, no,
I mean, yes,
of course.
It was very unfortunate. Yes, there was a lot that died. But at the same time, I mean, like I said, those of us who get eaten alive more than others, it's a health risk for us to be outside because we are going to be more, we have a higher chance of getting West Nile than people who don't get bit. And and it's a thing. I can stand next to my family. I am their bug spray.
Yeah.
They don't have to spray as much if they stand by me. It's just the way it is.
Oh, I feel for you. I'm with you.
I just wanted to get it out there that, you know, that's what the city of Moorhead's looking at doing is, saying no, we don't want any aerial spraying.
Yeah.
When they did the aerial spraying in Fargo a few weeks ago, they did not go over Moorhead.
Okay.
I saw them on the other side of the river, but they did not go over Moorhead because Moorhead has different. After that butterfly thing, they changed it so there's three levels of risk, and we have to be at high risk before they will do an aerial spray, which means West Nile needs to be detected in traps and in birds and some other stuff or whatever in order for them to even
Well, that's all happening now, so I don't know what more they're waiting for. So, we'll try to dig in on that, Marie. We usually can get Ben Prather on a fairly short turnaround, and he runs Vector Control, and he'll kind of map that out for us without throwing anybody under the bus. Thanks for giving a call, Marie. Appreciate it. There's a lot of people that that want to see good spraying happening because it is something that's needed, especially when we just get hammered by the rain the way we've had it. Thanks so much for calling today.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Marie. All right, 701-271-1100. That opens up a phone line for you if you want to talk about this as well. All right, 432, let's get to a news and weather break here, get you updated on the latest. And then as we return, if you want to weigh in on the spring conversation, we're certainly happy to have you do that. Do you like when there's more? Say, I'm one of these people like spray every other night. I mean, why not? It doesn't seem to matter when it is this bad because there's mosquitoes hatching every 20 minutes here. So we need to keep the pace up. And of course, you can't do that much. But Do you want to see more or less about the same? What are your thoughts on the mosquito spraying? 271-1100. All right, let's check in the newsroom for the latest headlines. 1 week from today in Jamestown, there will be a groundbreaking ceremony for the new North Dakota State Hospital over there in Jamestown. I believe it was called previously the North Dakota State Mental Hospital, although the terminology has changed over the years. The new facility is a $300 million project. It will provide 141 treatment beds to serve those most in need of acute mental health services. Governor Armstrong has been leading the charge on mental health, and it's been a welcome development as we have seen state leaders, both Governor Burgum and now Governor Armstrong, really getting serious about mental health across our state. We are pleased to be joined now on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line by Pam Sagnus, and Pam is the Executive Director of Behavioral Health at North Dakota Health and Human Services. Pam, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us on the program today.
Good afternoon.
Pam, I'm encouraged. I've told my audience is probably tired of me talking about this, but I'm so encouraged about this because I've often said we're going to pay for mental health one way or another. We're going to take care of it up front and treat people, give them a place where they need to be so that they can get the help that they need, or they're going to be turned loose into society. We're going to see problems on the streets of our cities, and we're seeing a much of that here over the last few years. What does this mean to Health and Human Services to have this facility going up now in Jamestown?
Well, I mean, this has just been such an exciting time to be working in mental health and behavioral health, you know, in general in North Dakota. We have such investment from, you know, as you mentioned, Governor Armstrong, but also our legislature, and ensuring that if someone has a mental health issue, that we are increasing access to services, not just in the community, but also making sure that all levels of care are available, like the state hospital.
So there are 141 treatment beds that will be constructed during this project. And I'm trying to remember back to some of the initial conversation when this amount of money was allocated by the legislature. But is this going to be kind of a complete rebuild, or will we still be using some of the old state hospital once this project is done?
So this is a complete new building, and it will be taking six buildings and moving into one. So really looking at, you know, everything from how we can do better care, but also how we can be more efficient and not having team members that are, you know, moving in between buildings. We'll be decreasing our footprint from more than 546,000 square feet to less than 295,000 square feet while still serving more people.
That's a job there, right? To take 600,000 and fit it into about 40% of that space. That's pretty amazing. Specifically, how will that help people do their job with a smaller footprint while still serving basically the same number of people?
Well, I think this was where having team members be able to participate in the planning process. Luckily, we had the opportunity from the previous session, the legislature appropriated funding for us to do planning over this last interim. And so being able to talk to nurses and people who work every day in the hospital and say, tell us how you could do your job better. And it's everything from making sure that admissions is close to where, you know, the care is, but also making sure that we have line of sight. And, you know, do we have bedrooms that are thoughtful about, you know, safety and always putting that first? And so we're able to use new building ideas and current practice to make sure that people are safe, cared for, and getting the therapeutic environment that they deserve.
When I see the number 141, the first thing that pops to my mind is how great is it that there are 141 people that are now going to be able to receive the care that they need. The second thought that pops in my mind is, man, it should maybe be 1,400 or 14,000, because we know there are a number of people in our state that have significant mental health issues and mental illnesses. How much of the problem can this solve, Pam?
Well, I think that's a really important question, in that we know that whenever possible, we want individuals to get services close to home. We don't want someone to have to go into an inpatient unit or leave their home community where they have their natural supports if they don't need to. And so we actually have contracts with private inpatient hospitals across the state. And just in 2025, in the state fiscal year, we reimburse private hospitals just shy of 8,000 bed days. so that individuals don't have to come to Jamestown or the state hospital if they're able to get the care that they need in their home community. And so the state hospital really specializes on very specialty care like forensics and sex offender treatment and those services that are more centralized, while making sure that individuals that need help, like for acute mental health issues or suicidal ideation, they're able to get that care right in their home.
You might have answered my next question, because I was going to ask you if there are certain profiles that match what we are going to be doing in Jamestown versus some of the other care that can be given in some of the satellite offices around the state. Can you talk a little bit more about who will be the kind of profile that will be sent to Jamestown for services there?
Sure. You know, so we do some specialty care in a few areas. One is in geriatric psychiatry. And so we have specialty provider, a phenomenal medical director who focuses on providing services. You know, when we have private providers that reach out that say, hey, we've been trying to provide care for this individual and, you know, we're stumped, we need your help. And so we can do specialty care like that. We often also are, you know, doing care around forensics. So, for example, fitness to proceed. If someone has potentially committed a crime and there's a question of whether or not they can, you know, whether they can participate in their defense, or if someone is found not guilty due to their mental illness, those would be the types of services that we do. We also have the civilly committed sex offender program, which means that we provide, you know, services to individuals who are, you know, considered to be at risk or a danger in regard to their sexual offenses and history.
Pam, this may be a more broad question than there is an easy answer for, but I'll ask anyway, because I've always been curious about this. When someone is, I imagine you are referred to Jamestown, right? You don't just go there on your own. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Yep.
So how do we decide when someone is quote unquote better and when they can go back home or go to another, maybe more of an outpatient facility? What does that criteria look like, and how does someone get discharged from Jamestown?
Well, so those are decisions that are made by the clinical team that's working with the individual. So there's a lot of things that go into consideration with that. You know, have their symptoms resolved to the point where they can be successful and safe in a lower level of care? We are always in our practice ensuring that individuals are able to get services first and foremost in their home community, but at the lowest level possible. And so those are all the things that go into consideration. We have residential facilities across the state, transitional living facilities. So as soon as someone is at a place where they no longer need that inpatient level of care, then we look at transferring to those residential levels of care. I also just want to give a little shout out to the legislature has been working on this issue for many years. And as a state, we've invested $165 million in community-based residential and outpatient care just since, 2018. And that's expansion. That's not sustaining. Those are things that are growth or new programs. And so our state really has been leading the effort in making sure that all levels of care exist, knowing that the hospital is one component of that.
When the news came out about the new facility, I believe the detail at that time was it's going to be about 3 years to construct the facility top to bottom. Is that still about right?
That is, yep. We because the planning was done during the last interim, we're able to move into groundbreaking. As you said, next week we'll have the groundbreaking ceremony, and we do anticipate still completion around 2027.
And the original hospital, I believe, had about 120 beds. So this is an expansion by a couple dozen?
Yes, it's more than an additional unit, and yet building in flexibility, safety, and ensuring that individuals can get the right level of care in a facility that's made in current times. You know, there's a lot of limitations when we're working in buildings that were made a long, long time ago and
sure,
prior to us understanding how to treat mental illness.
Yeah. Overall, Pam, as you take a look at the landscape of mental health services and mental health counseling, with the new hospital being built, with what you're doing in areas across the state, how do we compare to other states around us? Do we generally look pretty good compared to Wyoming, South Dakota, Minnesota? Are we a little behind the eight ball? How would you assess how we do competitively, and maybe especially once we get this new hospital built?
Well, I would say that in general, we have been a state that's seen some of the most progressive growth in regard to accessing services and ensuring that we're thinking about the citizens of North Dakota and what they need. We have invested in prevention, early intervention, treatment, recovery, recognizing that all of those things are so important. And as you mentioned, we've had great leadership from Governor Armstrong. This is a key area of focus and something that he's very passionate about. But we also are, you know, continuing to support the effort and work that was done by, you know, Governor Burgum and First Lady Catherine, you know, prior to that also. And so The state has really just advanced our work. And I think that we are someone that the rest of the nation should be looking at.
Yeah. Good stuff, Pam. Before I let you go, I just want to give you a minute to say anything else you want to talk about that maybe I didn't ask you about, any other notes or perspective that you think people should know.
No, I just want to make sure people know that there are services that are available. Often it's hard to reach out. And so, you know, we have public and private clinics across the state. Telehealth is very available. There's no reason to not get help. If anyone is struggling, whether it's just with depression, anxiety, anything you're struggling with, grief, loss, please reach out, get the help that you can. Call 988 and you can get connected to services. We also have crisis services across the state 24/7. So there's no reason to not, you know, seek help if you need it.
Very good. Pam, thank you very much for your time. And thanks to you and your team for all you do to try to make life better for so many of us that need help from time to time across the state.
Thank you.
Thanks for the time. Pam Sagnus, Executive Director of Behavioral Health with the North Dakota Health and Human Services Department. Good stuff there. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Washington, D.C. Now under the watch of the federal government, what did the president have to say today about why he's taking this unusual step? That's next on the Steve Holstrom Show. President Trump says it's Liberation Day. He is tired of crime in Washington, D.C.
Well, very quickly, like we did on the southern border, I'm announcing a historic action to rescue our nation's capital from crime, bloodshed, bedlam, and squalor, and worse. This is Liberation Day in D.C., and we're going to take our capital back. We're taking it back under the authorities vested in me as the President of the United States. I'm officially invoking Section 740 of the District of Columbia Home Rule Act. You know what that is? And placing the D.C. Metropolitan Police Department under direct federal control, and you'll be meeting the people that will be directly involved with that. Very good people, but they're tough, and they know what's happening, and they've done it before. In addition, I'm deploying the National Guard to help reestablish law, order, and public safety in Washington, D.C., and they're going to be allowed to do their job properly. And you people...
Okay, they start going into something else. They're like, you people need to understand that this is a good thing that we're doing. Whenever I see the federal government getting bigger, it makes me nervous. And I think probably a little bit is PTSD from past administrations, because Joe Biden wanted to take basically every, or his administration, his people, his inner circle, whatever. He wanted to take every aspect of your life and turn it over to the federal government. What kind of car you could drive, what kind of oven you could buy, how much you traveled, your health. They want to tell you what medicine, what health procedures. That they wanted to do all of that because they thought they were better at it than you were on taking care of yourself. So when I see things like that, my first reaction is, ah. But as one of the folks who chimed in on the text line reminded me of today, Steve, what makes the takeover of D.C. not bother me a bit is that it's a federal district and not in any way a normal city. Fair point. The other one that I guess I would add to this from my own rational thinking is we're not talking about the money you're spending in the city. We're not talking about what museums you can have, what kind of food establishments you can have there. We're talking about the public safety in the city, and it is the home of the federal government. And if you have an unsafe city that is a home for your federal government, then you have an unsafe federal government. And that doesn't work. It should be something of a shrine. Now, that might be a little overcooked, but you get my point. It should be something that we're proud of. I've heard people say, we want a shining city on the hill, shiny city on the hill. I don't know about that, but if you have foreign dignitaries, people, you know, classrooms of kids coming to D.C. and going to the nation's capital and seeing how government works, these are good things. We can't build a fence around a city to protect it that way. And since the city leaders seem to have difficulty doing this on their own, you know, then it kind of starts to make a little bit of sense to me about this whole thing.
Very quickly,
now,
like
you might wonder.
Southern-
yeah, thank you, Mr. President. We heard you earlier about that. So you might be wondering, what do people in the police ranks in D.C. think about this? And I think about this a lot because our friend Scott Hannon is taking a group of people to Washington, D.C., coming up here later on for Christmas in D.C. And the D.C. Police Union, so this is the head of the police union, is actually more than okay with it. This coming from, CNN here, of all places, reporting this. The union says, a quote, acknowledges and supports the president's announcement this morning to assume temporary control of the Metro PD in response to the escalating crime crisis in Washington, D.C. The chair of the union is a gentleman named Greg Pemberton. He says, we stand with the president in recognizing that Washington, D.C. cannot continue on this trajectory. Crime is out of control and our officers are stretched beyond their limits. The federal intervention is a critical stopgap, but the Metro Police Department needs proper staffing and support to thrive. This can only happen by repealing the disastrous policies that have driven out our best officers and hindered recruitment. You could rewind that and play it in any major city in the country. And honestly, as I take a look at what's happened in Fargo here, I'm not saying we're out of control, have an out of control crime problem, but we do have a crime problem here. And when it comes right down to it, officers are stretched beyond their limits. We need more officers, certainly need them in Fargo, and certainly need them in D.C. Hour two of the program coming up next. Here we go with hour number two of the Steve Alstrom Show on this Monday afternoon. We're going to start by hitting the phone lines because Crystal's been hanging on for a few minutes over the top of the hour. We were talking about crime in D.C. in the last hour, and she wants to weigh in on that topic. She joins us on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Hi, Crystal.
Well, hey there. I absolutely agree with what Donald Trump is doing, and I especially learned some things from Secretary of Interior Doug Burgum at the meeting. And I did not know that he's pretty much in charge of all the monuments and all the parks. So a lot of the stuff in D.C. is under his jurisdiction.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, the interior stuff.
Yeah. See, I used to live in D.C. before they had the subway in the 70s. And my husband was in the military and all kinds of good stuff like that. And it was crime problems there. And you not want to go anywhere.
Yeah.
But I'm happy that things are going to hopefully improve. And that Scott Hannon and his trip, as you said, will be successful. And thanks for the great opener with this whole stuff with the crime. We've got to clean up the city. I've been there numerous times. In the past, though, say 20 years, and it's an amazing city.
It is, yep.
But yeah, you just got to know where to go and where not to go, and
yep,
sometimes
right.
You need a few friends.
Yep, thank you,
okay.
Crystal.
Thanks
appreciate you giving a call. D.C. is a wonderful city. Wonderful city. There's so much history there. It is a massive footprint of big buildings, no question about that. And when you go there, you realize why things are so unchangeable at times in those big cities. They almost remind you of glaciers, that you're not going to move them very far, very fast. And Donald Trump comes in there and tries to change things. Yeah, to me, you're talking about public safety here. I think that a lot of the partisan arguments and rhetoric and bluster sort of dies away when you're saying, look, this city is not safe, and you all know it, even if you hate Donald Trump. So why not? We've got to try something different. And there are a lot of ways you can go in this conversation when you're talking about crime, but it's the same conversation they're having in bigger cities all across the country. And Democrats for years have said, our people feel like crime standards are too high and that there's too much law enforcement. And so they have found themselves in this weird spot of saying, we don't want law enforcement. We don't want police. We don't want law and order. And people in the big cities even are becoming more conflicted. You hear it all the time. People are saying, look, I've never thought of myself as a Republican. I don't love Trump, but I don't want a city where people are getting gunned down on neighborhood porches left and right. And certainly in big cities, you're going to have more of everything. We know that. But when President Trump gets involved in something, he tends to make things happen, which is a nightmare if you're on the other side. If you think what he stands for is good, though, it's fantastic. And I remember back to President Trump's speech at the Republican National Convention, and I played it here on this show as the opener for a long, long time. And basically he was saying, you have been told that your expectations are too high. Well, I'm here to tell you they're not high enough. And look at all the things he's trying to take on. I don't know how he's going to do this. And as I mentioned earlier, it makes me a little nervous when federal government thinks it's the answer. But clearly when local governments have no answers and things are getting worse and worse, and that happens to be the city where the federal government's headquarters are located in, then what do you think Donald Trump is going to do? He's not going to sit by and do nothing. So we need these big cities, New York City, D.C., Minneapolis, Los Angeles, Chicago. These are wonderful cities. I mean, the history they have there of just the influence they have and the culture blend they have there and the tourism and the travel. And many of them are places where, you know, large state governments happen. And gosh, I mean, all those things at one time in our country were so good. They were things to be proud of. And now you see so much garbage. And because they are so beholden to an ideology and they don't want to make their people mad, they just allow things to get worse and worse. And Donald Trump says, you know what? We've had enough. And I'm really glad that he's doing that. All right, 5:12 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Let's get into the top five of five. And the top five of five is my effort each day to bring you what I believe to be the five most consequential stories in the news cycle today. It's brought to you today by Delta Design and Construction. If you're thinking about a remodel, well, there are several advantages in building up. Preserve your yard, lower costs, increase property value without getting a bigger footprint for your property there. Consult with the professionals at Delta Design and Construction. Make sure of a successful and cost-effective project. Have you thought about building up instead of out? Well, now's a great time to get on the schedule. 701-235-1212, deltadesign.biz. Story number one, another weekend in Fargo and another shooting incident that police are now responding to. Police were called to an area in the a shooting in the area of 10th Street North and 6th Avenue North just after midnight Saturday morning. When they got to the area, they found a man with a gunshot wound. He's in critical but stable condition at a local hospital. This shooting is not related to any of the previous shootings that happened in Fargo the previous weekend, which if you're like me, it's kind of hard to keep them all straight. So it's kind of nice to have somebody tell you, no, this isn't related to any of those. But three shootings in the span of two weekends. And as of right now, this shooter is on the loose. And so is that Tyreek Jones, the first shooter, who's on the loose as well. Police say they're looking for a scruffy-looking white male wearing a red shirt. And if you have any information, you're asked to get in touch with the Fargo Police Department. The man and the victim were involved in a physical fight before the shooting happened, and the suspect left the scene before officers got there. The city went on to have a fairly quiet weekend on the streets of Fargo, but this was another one of those, like, you got to be kidding moments. Here we go again. So that's story number one. That suspect still on the loose. Story number two, the Forum has done a kind of a long format expose on the drug trafficking and drug arrests going on in Fargo. And they report that 38 people this year have been charged in 12 cases with direct ties to the Fargo-Moorhead metro area. All of the cases involve fentanyl, meth, cocaine, or some combination of the three. The note I thought was interesting here is that overdoses this year are up 82% in the area this year, in the metro area this year. Over the years, we've watched these numbers, and after COVID, we had a surge in overdoses, and then things seemed to get better. But here we are up 82%. That's almost a doubling from year over year. And they go into in this story that is written here by Tasha Carvel, they go into all of the different storylines of all these crimes and the arrests and who they were and why they were there. And man, there's just a lot of people who have nothing to do with our area who are trafficking in this area. Some of them illegal, some of them from right here in the area. But man, you just take a look at all the mugshots here, and it's just sad looking at all of these people that are now involved in some of these crimes. But I thought that overdose number was very interesting. That's why I put it in the top five at five. All right, story number three is from South Dakota, but along the same lines, Governor Larry Roden has announced a record drug seizure by South Dakota's Highway Patrol. The Highway Patrol apprehended a 42-year-old male who was stopped while driving and found to be transporting about 207 pounds of crystal meth with a street value of about $12 million. This is the largest meth seizure in Highway Patrol history. The driver was an illegal and is now in immigration proceedings. And the governor says that this is the eighth non-citizen stopped by the Highway Patrol since they started working with ICE. He was initially stopped for speeding on I-90 in Sturgis by a Highway Patrol trooper. And it says the driver exhibited behaviors consistent with criminal activity, looking a little shady there. And they went through the vehicle and found 207.24 pounds of crystal meth. So, again, the driver is innocent until proven guilty, but he's going to have a problem and is now in custody of ICE officials as well. And deportation proceedings are underway. So good work being done down there in South Dakota as well. Story number four, we've been talking about this a fair amount. President Trump says he's taking over Washington's police department, activating 800 members of the National Guard in hopes of reducing crime. President held a press conference today saying we're going to take our capital back and we're going to get rid of the slums. So that's interesting because it's not just about law enforcement then. He's talking about some of the neighborhood areas. Now, if Donald Trump can figure out how to get rid of the slums and turn those into decent living condition areas, I think whoever follows him in 2028 on the Republican side will win in a landslide. It might be another Reagan election there. Pam Bondi, the attorney general, will assume responsibility for Washington's Metro Police Department. He railed against potholes and graffiti in the city and called it all embarrassing. The president did not provide a timeline for the control of the police department, but he's limited to 30 days under statute. So this will be interesting to see what happens from here. Now, the D.C. police union chief is saying this is a good thing. The head of the cops is saying we stand with the president in recognizing Washington, D.C. cannot continue on this trajectory. Crime is out of control and our officers are stretched beyond their limits. The federal intervention is a critical stopgap, but the Metro PD needs proper staffing and support to thrive. This can only happen by repealing the disastrous policies that have driven out our best officers and hindered recruitment. Now, the mayor of Washington, D.C. is a Democrat, obviously, and so the mayor is not real happy about this and says that this is an unwelcomed assertion, unsettling and unprecedented. Muriel Bowser said today this so-called emergency is unnecessary because the Capitol's crime rate has been trending down after the post-pandemic increase that peaked back in 2023. Now, she's talking tough, but she says she will cooperate with federal authorities. So that's interesting. This is not one of these Gavin Newsom, heck no, get out of here, we're not going to have you Bowser said, we're not experiencing a spike in crime. We're experiencing a decrease in crime. Of course, you know how statistics on crime go. You never quite know exactly how these things are going. The mayor does acknowledge that Trump has authority under the Home Rule Act for exercising the federal government power over certain parts of D.C. governance. So this is going to be a very interesting 30 days to watch and see what happens there. I don't know what he can get done in 30 days. I really don't. But this should be very interesting to watch. Trump doesn't want to fail at things because obviously, as you know, people will be pointing that out if it doesn't work. So I think he's going to roll up his sleeves and get to work here. This will be very interesting to watch. And finally for you tonight, I've got a story about tourism. And this kind of started with a story about Las Vegas. But there is a bigger story about international travel into the U.S. that comes out of this as well. So the head of the U.S. Chamber says that they're seeing a decline in visitation to the United States of about 11% year over year, and international spending in the U.S. is expected to fall by $12.5 billion this year. That's according to the World Travel and Tourism Council, who researches the global tourism industry. The industry will make $169 billion this year, down from about $181 billion last year. And the shortfall reflects a 22.5% drop compared to the previous peak. So from peak travel, we're down quite a bit. In Las Vegas, it's about 11% that they are down in occupancy and hotels this year. I went online because I was kind of thinking about maybe doing something to go to Vegas. I still have never been and would love to go. And so I started looking at hotel rates, and I booked the travel when we had the winner of the Vegas getaway on WDAY. And at that time, I was surprised. I had never booked hotel rooms in Vegas. I was surprised at how inexpensive they were. I think I got rooms at the Four Seasons for like $475 a night. Usually it's like $1,475 a night if you go to a Four Seasons. So we booked that. Our couple had a great time on the trip, but I just looked again, and now they've like doubled since then. And I think we booked those rooms back, I don't know, maybe February, March, something like that. And so to see now that prices are way up in Las Vegas, if you're a frequent traveler to Las Vegas, are you seeing that as well? It just seems like prices are really being jacked up there. It used to be you'd get cheap hotels because then you'd go gamble there. Well, I don't know. I don't know that you can find the cheap hotels there anymore. But there may be a broader decline in international tourism to the United States. Don't know exactly why there would be a decrease overall in travel. There doesn't seem to be many decreases in travel at all anywhere. But some people are saying it's a wake-up call for the U.S. government. So not sure, like, if tariffs, I don't know that they affect travel, really. So if you got a theory on this, maybe why travel, international travel to the U.S. is down, let me know. Would be interested in hearing what you believe about that. All right, 523, and those are what I believe to be the five most consequential stories in the news cycle today. We call it the top five at five. When we return on the Steve Hallstrom Show, the numbers don't look great when it comes to the federal deficit, but I believe there's a good reason for that. That story when we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show. 88% of emergency room visits, says the CDC, and hospitalization for hip fractures were caused by falls, and falling down is the leading cause of injury in our country for adults 65 and over. The good news for you is that StyleSafe Bath and Shower is there to help. If you're starting to ask some questions about staying in that house as long as possible, but wondering about the safety, they offer a free in-home safety assessment and will give you a review of some of the hot spots in your house where you might be more susceptible to a fall. They want to keep you on your feet. They can add railings, grab bars, supports near your bed, your favorite chair, and they can talk about that bathroom because more than 20 million adults a year are injured in the bathroom. Stepping over the tub is where a lot of those things happen. StyleSafeFargo.com is the website. StyleSafeFargo.com. StyleSafe Bath and Shower, locally owned, veteran friendly. They are the experts in tub to shower conversions. Well, the U.S. federal government's annual budget deficit has widened. Now, this might be a story that puts some of you to sleep, but I think this stuff is really interesting, especially because we're about 5/6 of the way through the budget year. The federal government's year starts in October. So we've got an incomplete report card on President Trump, certainly being in office, but the budget deficit has widened. And this after all of the income coming in. Federal tax receipts were up year over year, about 6%. But if you take a look at the spending, yeah, there's been all the tariff money that's been coming in, so that's a good thing right there. But the spending is up $372 billion in the first 10 months of fiscal year 2025 compared with last year. Much of that, mandatory spending programs, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. Spending on Social Security up $102 billion alone, up about 8% from last year. Medicare spending $58 billion higher. And the costs of servicing our $37 trillion national debt also went up, of course. Bigger debt, higher interest rates, and that's what you get. So all of these things are real big headwinds. And I understand when people say we'll never get out of this debt. It's just too big right now. Well, we have to try. And we got to do something big. The DOGE effort was a good start. But we've got to completely redo how things go, and there has to be growth. There's no way you can cut spending enough to work your way out of this. It's got to happen with growth. It's a tricky balance, but we'll watch to see how it happens. But I thought that was interesting when you take a look at here we are now 10 months into the fiscal year. That budget deficit is up $109 billion. But really, you're just talking basically about the entitlement programs, so the mandatories, Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. 5:31, Steve Hallstrom Show. Check of news and weather. Then we're going to talk a little bit about something that you might not pay a lot of attention to, but probably you'll pay attention to the bugs that carry the subject matter. We're talking about West Nile and mosquitoes with our ag director, Bridget Reed, who has a very personal story about this when we come back. 5:35, Steve Hallstrom Show. We have Ben Prather on from Cass County Vector Control early last week, and that was before we got pounded with another round of rain that brought, well, 4 inches of rain to my backyard, 7 inches down in Ellendale, pretty much all across the southeast part of the state. We got several inches of rainfall on top of what's been a fairly wet summer already. And boy, it didn't take long for the mosquitoes to show up, and they are horrible right now. There was aerial spraying in Fargo on Thursday night, but there's only so much can be done when you have wave after wave after wave of mosquitoes that are hatching. And so I'm thankful for all the efforts of Cass County Vector Control because Executive Director Prather told us at that time that they were a little nervous because they were seeing a high number of mosquitoes carrying West Nile in the traps. And that's the first time it had really been discussed much locally. And, of course, now we start to see more details about hospital admissions and things like that. And now with more mosquitoes being out there, it's something that we definitely need to pay attention to. And even if you're not one of those people that gets bothered by the mosquitoes, you have to be aware of this West Nile virus. Bridget Riedel is our ag director here at Flag Family Media, and she has a very personal connection to this story, and she joins us now to talk a little bit about it. Hi, Bridget. How are you?
Afternoon, Steve. Doing very well. Thank you.
I'll just let you go, sister. Tell us a little bit about why this means so much to you.
So if we recall the weather conditions of late August 2012, that was a late summer that was fairly dry. And right about this time of the year, we were in wheat harvest. My dad thought he had the flu. My dad at the time was 58 years old. And was also a diabetic. So was dad in perfect health? No, he was not. But nonetheless, he thought he had the flu, entered the hospital locally where we live in Wishick, North Dakota. Then after being in the hospital for a couple of days, things weren't improving, transferred to Bismarck and spent the next 6 months in the ICU and in and out of long-term care in Bismarck. He never came home again after being diagnosed with the West Nile virus. Now, when we think of a virus, it literally is a portal that opens up your body to so many other problems that come along with it. For dad, that included things like losing the ability to swallow, so he was going to need a feeding tube for the rest of his life. He was no longer walking. Pacemaker, renal failure. He had trouble holding his head up at one point in time. The nerve endings, or excuse me, the sheath over the nerve endings disappeared and was trying to reheal, and that's very painful. And so for patients with West Nile, there is not a cure. You are going to be treated for your symptoms, and those who are survivors, so to speak, still continue to have tremors as well as seizures and massive headaches due to the West Nile virus still in their bodies. And for those folks, it's a long-term situation. There's many things that go along with it, but when we think to ourselves, it's just a virus, it's only mosquitoes, we are at a point in time where the mosquitoes that carry West Nile, like a drier summer, although that's flipped on us now, we've gotten wetter, they are there, and we have to pay attention.
Yeah, Ben Prather was telling us that even before the numbers really got crazy and before we got all the rain that we got recently here, he said our trap counts, they are not good. There's way more mosquitoes than we would expect. And I think he said about double the number of mosquitoes with West Nile in their traps. So all it took was a big rainfall and a new hatch, a new wave of mosquitoes. And, well, you can understand why now there are more and more people that are headed to the hospital. And, Bridget, you talked about it. This is, at some point, you know, you think, okay, I'm going to get this and I'll get over it. Most viruses are that way. You sweat it out. You have a week or two when you feel like, you know, going out and finding a tall tree and a short rope, but after a while you get better. With West Nile, you never get better, and your family knows that firsthand.
Absolutely. You know, we need to remember that right off the bat, again, this is a virus. There is not a cure. And when folks ask if there's a vaccine that they can take, there is not. Pharmaceutical companies have not done the research, because one of the problems is even if there was a viable vaccine for it, there's still 5% of the population that would be non-reactive to the vaccine and would probably still be a fatality.
Yeah.
And those are numbers that the companies are not willing to work with. Now, horses can be vaccinated. And a clear tip-off that we think West Nile is in a region is if we see dead birds for no apparent reason lying on the ground, because birds are also heavily affected by West Nile.
Yeah, that's really great, great perspective, too. I was going to ask you if animals could be affected by this, and you kind of give us the answer there to that. Do you know, Bridget, have we seen more dead birds that exhibit the symptoms? I imagine that there probably are more, but have we seen a noticeable uptick in that?
Here's the hard part to tell this year. I think we may have, but with some of the heavy windstorms that we have had through this region, with so much tree damage, we've all seen a ton of dead birds we weren't expecting to see because of the storm. So it very easily could be that West Nile was approaching, but we couldn't tell. Literally, our canary in the coal mine died in a windstorm.
Yeah, yeah. What's your message? What are you and the family? I know you're in some advocacy efforts now to get the word out about this, and it's obviously something that has touched your family. What is your message to all of us when you start hearing news stories like this, that the numbers are on the upswing?
This is not just a virus, and it can affect anyone. It is not held to the elderly or anything like that. I can cite examples of all age groups, from children to adults. Again, my dad was only 58 when he died, and we need to think about the fact that wearing long pants and long sleeves when we're in a mosquito situation towards evening, even if you don't like bug spray, wash it off at the end of the evening, but make sure to protect yourself. Dump out standing water so you aren't enticing breeding grounds in your home or workplaces. And West Nile can, in fact, be a hard to get diagnosis. So if you have any reasons for suspicion, make sure to ask for the test so that folks can find the diagnosis and then treat the symptoms that come with it.
What are some of the early symptoms that we might notice if it's hitting us, but it hasn't completely gotten out of hand yet? What are some of the first things that we can see?
Extreme fatigue, headaches. Many people report flu-like symptoms. In the case of a young woman in Devil's Lake, North Dakota, for her, she thought that her symptoms were indeed just a severe flu. She went into try to get some fluids and be tested. Was told she did not have the flu. She was only 23 years old at the time that she passed away. And from when she felt sick until she literally died and it was found through an autopsy that she had the West Nile virus was only about 2 weeks.
Yeah, wow. It hits hard and it hits fast, no question about that. It's a great reminder for us to make sure we're taking those things seriously about bug spray and long clothes. The tough thing, though, Bridget, those of us that have the O negative blood that the mosquitoes like, they will bite through clothing at some points to get at you. So I don't know what you do about that.
You know, that's the downside. I can give suggestions. Is there a perfect solution? There is not. Like you said, I really appreciate the efforts made by Cass County Vector Control to help us with our cities to minimize the amount of mosquitoes that are out in the air. And by all means, I know that has to happen. Thank them for doing that. And above all, know that they're giving it their best effort. But when we continue to get all these short rainstorms, that tends to wave our effectiveness
as
well,
tough.
As unfortunately.
Yeah,
it's
tough to stay ahead of it when it's been as wet as it has been here, especially recently. When you get those big, heavy rains where several inches fall at the same time, you're going to get standing water for quite a while, even in just residential areas with flat yards. It doesn't really matter. There's going to be some pooling of water somewhere, and that's all they need.
It's been rough. Just this afternoon, since about 4:20, we had a 20-minute rain shower that dumped 0.4 inches of rain in my gauge here in northwestern Cass County. So all of this adds up to be diligent, do the things that you can, and if in fact you are bit, take it seriously. West Nile is not just a virus.
Yeah. Bridget, while I have you here, I know you talk about ag topics all the time. And with this rainfall, have we seen many areas in the region where they're looking at fields that are, say, just washed out or flooded? I know there's always a few examples of things here and there, but are we seeing enough of that to be concerned about what our harvest might look like for our farmers?
Not yet. And I say not yet because I don't know that we always are aware of the extent of the damage at this point. We certainly are losing yield with flooded fields with corn, soybeans, et cetera. We are just starting sugar beet pre-pile this week, so it'll be interesting to see what those tonnages are and what that could potentially improve if we have some drier weather. We have a lot of small grains that's standing. We'd really like to get that off before any further rainfall because we don't want to lose quality in the small grains. So we're at that critical juncture of we need it to stop so we have less concern than might be happening. There are some cornfields out there that there was enough water in them that it was touching the cobs.
Yeah,
so that's a lot of fluid moving through a field.
Oh, my word. Can you believe that?
We just have to do a little bit of a wait and see, but there are going to be some fields that are just destroyed.
Yeah, I'm sure there are. Bridget, thank you very much for being here. Thanks for giving us some perspective that we don't get from just your garden variety ag director. So thank you for adding some value to our show today. And we're thankful that you and your family are as active as you are about talking about this, because it's one of those things you're like, your dad died of what? And it's almost hard to believe. But we do need to be talking about it, thinking about it, and you got to take it seriously with bug spray. Even if they don't bug you, even if you don't mind a bite or two, it doesn't take much for some real trouble to begin.
Yep, be aware. That's the best thing you can do.
Yes, ma'am. Thanks so much, Bridget.
Have a great night.
You too. Bridget Riedel, Ag Director here at Flag Family Media. Sounding the alarm, and boy, it's one thing to know there's a problem. It's another thing to have a family member taken from you. Well, as you might expect, the five today was classic when it comes to talking about Donald Trump's D.C. cleanup, and Greg Gutfeld was on point. We'll play a little bit of that for you when we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Decent chance of some rain here tonight. Bridget talked about how there was some showers that rolled through. She lives in the northwest part of Cass County. That's kind of headed our way. There's a system that is just going to pop stuff up here and there. Looks like for about the next 2 to 3 hours or so, by about 10, the whole thing should sort of die out. But we could get a thunderstorm. Could be heavy. Could get some big rain amounts in a short amount of time. So we will see what happens there. From the text line, Steve, my understanding this right, mosquitoes hatching this wet season were laid last summer. Is this correct or fake news? I'm glad you asked that because I have asked that same question. And here's the deal. Mosquito eggs can sit in very dry conditions for months, and they can last over the winter and then hatch the next year. At this point of the summer, Generally, the thought process is it's because of activity that happened with the mosquitoes this year, but it's possible for them to sit over the winter and then hatch. But those are generally the ones in the early part of the summer. So that's what Ben Prather told me, I don't know, a couple of years ago when I asked him that. So there you go on that one. All right. Well, on the five today, as you can imagine, they were talking a lot about President Trump's mandate now, his executive order deploying the National Guard to help tame D.C. crime. And Dana Perino and Greg Gutfeld were absolutely fantastic on this subject today.
Occurred to me today.
Ooh, exciting.
Is that President Trump isn't doing this for himself, right? So he lives in the White House. He has car service through the Secret Service. He gets to go to Mar-a-Lago. He goes to his place. What's it called? The one, the nice place?
Bedminster.
And so it's like he's wanting to make the city better for other people. And he's like, okay, well, I have the power to try to help. So we might as well give this a shot.
Most of the big questions that he addresses are like that. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed that? Whether it is the border or the Middle East or this, it's like he'll look at war and you'll think, oh, he's so simplistic about saying, what a waste. When he looks at war, he says, what a waste. Mm-hmm. All these people dying. They could be working and making money. That's how he thinks. And he's like, all these people dying, carjacking, that's bad. And all the academics are like, oh, he's so simple. Sorry, dude. He's right. You know what? I used to look at life, Dana, as something that everything would go my way. And when things go wrong, that would be the exception. I realize that it's the opposite, that life is actually a series of inconveniences. And when something goes right, that you should be grateful. That's Trump. You know, if you look at Trump expecting a smooth ride, you're insane, right? Mm. But if you accept his brash, confrontational, unpredictable style as the system, when you get these big gifts, whether it is the closed border or the Abraham Accords, you go, wow, that's something else. And you're grateful for it. Trump is the human embodiment of life itself. In that, it's challenging. It's unpredictable. It's a bit wild. It could be scary. But when things go right, it's wonderful and it's huge. I wasn't planning on saying that, but you asked me that question. Can I talk about crime?
Okay, so then he goes on to some other things there. You know, that's 100% right. There's a lot of frustration, I think, from people who want predictability. They want order. They want, you know, logistics to map out. They want a chronological order, sequential order to things. I am one of those people. I don't like it when I don't know what's going to happen next. With Donald Trump, you never know what's going to happen. And probably the first term he was in office, maybe like the first couple of years, I was like, I have no idea what this guy is doing. Like, he says one thing and does another, and it took me a while to realize that's just how he does it. The whole tariff thing has frustrated economists because they have wanted to understand how everything goes. They are kind of operational checklist kind of people. They want to have some sort of predictability to what Donald Trump is doing so they can try to interpret, but that's not what Trump is going to give you. He's going, like Greg Gutfeld said, he's going to give you a roller coaster ride. But there are times when you think that roller coaster ride is pretty fun and it's pretty good. And then there's the other 90% of the time that you don't really know what to make of it until you get done with a roller coaster ride. And then you say, you know, that was pretty good. Maybe I'll do that again. And that is 100% right. He is wild. He is scary. But when it goes right, it's huge. It's exactly right. And that is a really good point. And, you know, who of us thought that we'd be sitting here 6 months into Trump's term and he was going to take over the D.C. Police Department? He just decides to do things that make so much sense. That's why the establishment doesn't know what to make of him. Why would you not do what he's doing? If you've got 30 days to go ahead and do it, why not try? Well, most people are too lazy, too, I don't know, never done that before, too uncertain to do it, but not Trump. And so much of what he does are things that are simplistic. That's right. And that's why he's a great populist, because he looks at what the world, the community, the state, the city, the country, whatever is giving him and says, that doesn't make any sense. Why don't we fix that? And most people go, you know, you're right. There's, of course, the one third of the country or whatever that's going to hate everything he does. So those people are sort of beyond approach. But when he does these things and he basically takes care of the entire southern border crisis in about a month, I think a lot of people look at that and say, I may not love Donald Trump. I may love Donald Trump, may hate him, doesn't matter. But they say, this makes sense. And why would the president of our country not try to get involved in some of these things and make them better? And this is another one. It is definitely going to put people on their heels in Washington, D.C. But did you see what the mayor said? She said, I don't like it, but he's got a right to do it, and I'll work with him. So that's the kind of mayor that you can actually work with when it comes to Democrats. You have trouble with people like Gavin Newsom and these other people that run governments of various kinds. You got to remember he is a president, and he can make some calls, and it is legal for him to do that. And other than the activists, people are going to say, I'm kind of glad he's doing it. DJ Coulter, American Family Insurance, wants you to remember you need to be a claims manager of your account. Try to take some higher deductibles. That keeps your premiums down. Self-insure the small stuff. So here's an insurance guy saying, raise your deductibles. It'll cost you less. Who does that? Well, DJ Coulter does that. 701-235-6641. And that goes to show you he's a guy that you can definitely trust. All right, well, that'll do it for the program today. Shannon Full will be with us tomorrow. The CEO of the FM West Fargo Chamber. We want to talk about what the business community is talking about, thinking about, and doing in this period of uncertain economic times. That'll be a good one tomorrow. You won't want to miss that. Until then, my friend, have a good night and keep on flying that flag.